You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, November 8, 2017.
I feel that your political position has been used for fear-mongering purposes, and taken this in a direction that it's not intended. Worse, I believe that you've actively promoted division.
Last night's Bloomington City Council meeting became heated as City Planning Director Terry Porter accused a council member of abusing their authority while reviewing the city's proposed comprehensive plan. That story is coming up later in the program in today's WFHB feature report.
Also coming up next in the half hour, our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware, explores the world of program bots and kidnapping scams. That's coming up on a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
A New York Times article released this afternoon alleges that the Indiana University Foundation offshored assets in the Cayman Islands in a federal tax avoidance scheme. New York Times piece sources leaks from a Bermuda-based law firm called Appleby. A source from the firm has been at the center of the release of millions of documents spotlighting the world of offshore banking. So-called Paradise Papers implicate a host of investors, from Apple CEO Paul Allen to Madonna to Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. The piece alleges that the Indiana University Foundation partnered with Texas Christian University through a Houston-based private equity firm called Quintana Capital. That partnership allegedly used a so-called blocker corporation to avoid taxes on investments that would otherwise be subject to federal taxes. The blocker corporation also allegedly allows the IU and TCU foundations to make investments that would otherwise draw moral scrutiny to the nonprofits. The Cayman Islands charge low or no corporate taxes. IU Foundation Director of Strategic Communications and Projects, Matt Cavian, issued the following statement to WFHB, quote, "The investment activities of the Indiana University Foundation are well within the legal boundaries that govern such practices," unquote. IU Foundation President and former Dean of the Kelly School of Business, Dan Smith, issued a statement to WFHB admitting to the foundation's use of blocker corporations. Smith said, quote, "The use of blocker entities is an accepted and long-standing common practice by university foundations across the country. IU's use of them has been reviewed and approved by the IU Foundation Board of Directors Investment Committee, by the foundation's Audit Committee, and by the foundation's external auditors," unquote. The Indiana University Foundation's assets are estimated at over $2.5 billion, according to a publicly available 2015 financial audit.
Vice President Michael Pence will be in Plainfield tomorrow to advocate for the Trump administration's tax reform bill. Pence is expected to be joined by Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb and U.S. Labor Secretary Mike Acosta. A White House press release states the vice president's visit will shut down the Indianapolis International Airport Arrivals Terminal during his visit to aboard Air Force Two. The visit is Pence's second to Indiana to back the tax reform proposal. Low-income families in Indiana can now apply for financial heating assistance. The Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority's Winter Assistance Program is accepting applications until May 18th. The Low Income Energy Assistance Program is a federally funded grant providing financial assistance to low-income households in need of help with utilities. Brad Meadows is Marketing and Communications Director for the Indiana Housing Community Development Authority. He says while the program does not pay for the family's entire utility bill, it does provide some monetary help.
This program is a federal program that we receive money from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and those that are eligible, which the eligibility this year, their income does not exceed 150% of the federal poverty guideline. So any household generally that's under about $36,900 for a family of four would be eligible for the program. And then they apply, and then if they're eligible, and then they would receive a stipend to go towards their heating bill.
Meadows says those interested should go to the Housing Community Development Authority's website. May 18th is the last day to apply and complete an application for winter benefits.
City of Bloomington Planning Director Terry Porter says City Councilmember Chris Sturbaum is fear-mongering when it comes to the issue of housing density.
I feel that your political position has been used for fear-mongering purposes. And taken this in a direction that it's not intended. Worse, I believe that you've actively promoted division.
Porter spoke at last night's city council meeting as the council began its review of the city's draft comprehensive plan. The council began its review of the draft comp plan in August. Protecting core Bloomington neighborhoods as the city grows has consistently been a topic of concern and discussion throughout the council's comp plan review. Porter's comment came in response to Sturbaum's concern the draft comp plan contains conflicting directives on this issue.
I'd like to hear, kind of reconcile the seemingly contradictory directives of protecting single-family neighborhoods, yet adding density into single-family neighborhoods. I just see that as a direct contradiction.
Porter maintains there is no such conflict. Citing a paragraph from page 52 of the draft comp plan, Porter said preserving single-family neighborhoods is a pervasive theme throughout the plan.
Moving ahead, senior resident, workforce, and affordable housing options must be part of the housing solutions for downtown Bloomington. We must beware of gentrification, which removes older affordable housing options and replaces them with new high-priced housing options.
Sturbaum maintains it is the council's duty to seek out questionable or unclear language. Porter maintains taking passages out of context for scrutiny and revision risks misrepresenting the document's original meaning, ultimately scaring the community, some of whom are beginning to speak up at council meetings. Here's a portion of Sturbaum and Porter's fuller conversation. Director Porter speaking first.
And, you know, as long as we seem to be going down this road, I have to say, and I didn't speak up last hearing, and no one else did either, other than folks who got to the podium and used words like heartsick, frightened, fearful. Those are very disturbing. And to me, and this may sound very strong, but this is how I feel, that I feel that your political position has been used for fear-mongering purposes, and taken this in a direction that it's not intended. Worse, I believe that you've actively promoted division between your constituents and promoted an us-versus-them culture, as if the city and its departments, including planning and transportation, would have anything but the public's best interest at heart and would have anything to hide that we're up to something. I would like to demand at this point that stop. I want that behavior to stop. We are all working for the community good and the best interest of the community here, and I would really like that to be understood.
I appreciate that, and I would love to be wrong. So that's why, as I read language that doesn't seem to say what I understand the plan to want to say, I think it's a service to clean that out.
Well,
because these are going to be instructions to the next the UDO and the writing of that document, and we want to be very clear, not find this is here and this is here. And
let me remind you, please, that this is a planning document. And I don't mean to be critical. I don't mean to be critical. But I have reviewed and assisted dozens and dozens of communities across the country and several states with their community plans. And I have never seen a community fret so much about a plan. This is not intended to be perfect. We've said this over and over.
And Councilmember Dorothy Granger responded to Porter saying it's the council's job to fret over the comp plan's details. Porter cautioned against putting too much detail into the plan, saying it could become too voluminous for the public to digest. Porter referred to the comprehensive master plan as a living, breathing document. She said she'd like to see it reviewed every 5 years, and the Unified Development Ordinance, which is based on the comp plan, reviewed annually. The dynamics of growth and the need for housing were an issue again later in the meeting as the council continued its amendment process. The comp plan includes projections from consultants that the city will need to replace more than 6,000 aging units and build more than 7,000 new housing units by the year 2030. Council members Sturbaum and Isabel Piedmont Smith authored an amendment to remove the data from the comp plan, saying more accurate estimates were needed.
And the item that caught my eye was a projected figure of 6,100 demolitions in the Bloomington area. And this made no sense to the numbers that I understand about the core neighborhoods and the old neighborhoods. And, you know, there are only 400 in the Prospect Hill neighborhood. There are about 700 in the Near West Side. I was trying to add up 6,100, and it was kind of an inconceivable number. And that led us to realize that these numbers came from the Bloomington Metropolitan Statistical Area, which is a three-county area, including entirely Monroe County and two adjacent counties. So there are more housing. There's more housing in the surrounding part of the county than the city part of the county. So the reason that it appeared unrealistic was because the numbers were unrealistic. And then leaving them in the document, it sort of drives the narrative of there's so much that we have to build, plus we're going to lose this many properties. That becomes 13,000 some. So there's this drive to build that makes us think we have to expand more than maybe we actually do. So
Sturbaum and Piedmont Smith said not only is the data misleading, but is being interpreted as condoning replacement of existing housing. Planning Director Porter saw removing data was inappropriate. She said she and the planning staff don't understand interpreting LEAP to mean demolish.
Okay, so if thesaurus search for replaced, restored, renovated, remodeled, renewed, modernized, rejuvenated, reconditioned, repaired, refurbished, there's nothing that comes up demolish. And there's nothing else in the plan that indicates anywhere that there would be plans for demolition. So that's a point of contention for staff.
Porter promoted wordsmithing the section over deleting the data, adding that the consultant, quote, didn't write the paragraph for this level of scrutiny. The council ultimately passed the amendment to remove the data on a vote of 5-2. More than a handful of people from the community addressed the council during public comment. John Lawrence of the Council of Neighborhood Associations was among those who said much of the public isn't aware of the council's comp plan review process or the document's long-term impact. Granger was among several council members who encouraged the public to get involved in the plan review process.
I will remind people that a number of the amendments that we have presented have been at the behest of community members. So engage yourself with this document. Look at it when we get the version where, that includes the amendments. If you have questions or concerns, people should call us. This is how we're getting the public input. This is how you get your say. And now we might not always agree with it, but, you know, we'll talk about these and we will look at these suggestions that people have.
Last night's session ends a first round of chapter-by-chapter amendments. Councilmember Steve Volin echoed Granger in encouraging members of the public to contact their council representatives before the council's next comp plan review on December 5th. The council's timeline for considering the draft comprehensive plan is available online at bloomington.in.gov. Reporting live for WFHB News, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility, found locally at 812-334-4003, and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. Support for WFHB also comes from the Uptown Cafe, established in 1976, located at 102 East Kirkwood Avenue, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner, as well as wine, beer, spirits, and cocktails. More information is available online at the-uptowncafe.com. Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
So what's a botnet, anyhow? Well, the bot part is, of course, the second syllable of the word robot, and the net is obviously the Internet. A botnet is a collection of computers, webcams, digital video recorders, refrigerators, light switches, and other things which are connected online, all of which have been taken over by hackers. All these things are linked into one sort of supercomputer and used to attack and infect other computers and to slam a selected website with so many hits that it crashes. These so-called denial-of-service attacks have been taking down servers all over the planet. And bad guys running botnets are now offering their evil services for hire. Pay their price, and they'll crash a website or even an entire electric supply grid. This year's Halloween scary story, announced last week, was about a new botnet called Reaper. Security firms NetLab 360 and Checkpoint say Reaper has at least 28,000 devices and maybe as many as 2 million ready to launch attacks. So any device you have that goes online needs to have a password, your password, not the one from the factory, and if it ever starts acting weird in any way, you need to pay attention and get it fixed, even if you have to do a complete reset. Then there's Bad Rabbit, a new and nastier ransomware virus that has surfaced in Russia. The lowlifes have upgraded their weapon, and it's attacking corporate networks. Once it gets into one computer in a company, it can spread itself to all the others. And, of course, a ransomware attack encrypts all the files on your computer, turns them into digital garbage, blocks any access, and won't release them until you pay money. All too often, not even then. Even if you're not online, dangers are ramping up. The FBI is warning about a major increase in fake kidnapping telephone calls. Crooks target people, especially older people, with a frantic phone call saying someone in their family or a close friend has been kidnapped and demand immediate payments or else. A father in Dallas was told that if he hung up, his son would be killed. A mother in Boston heard a voice saying, "I have your daughter in the back of my van and I'm going to kill her." A lady in Los Angeles sent $4,000 to Mexico after a voice on the phone told her, "I have your daughter. I've cut off a finger, and if you want the rest of her back in a body bag, it's up to you." all of these people found out later that their loved ones were perfectly all right and had never been in danger. As the sergeant on Hill Street Blues used to say in every episode, be careful out there. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, Alex Davis, and Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Our engineer today, Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer, Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Brown County Hour, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.